Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing when franchises need to just die. Also, our spoiler-free reviews of the fall of the House of Usher and The Creator, and our Halloween watch list, a whole teachable minute, and much, much more. Let's get on with the show. Some more. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Like, would you say a lot more or a medium more?
A bit Seymour.
Okay.
Troy Heinrichs.
Feed me, Seymour.
And Amanda Sink will pop up a little later with our Fall of the House of Usher review, but outside of that, she won't be here. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And you can always share your thoughts if you want to on this episode by email, feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 818-814-6246. What's up, guys?
People actually use a phone number still?
Yeah, man. You live in this world where if you don't do it, no one should.
Nobody under 40 uses a phone number.
You live in the dad's world where I don't do it. Stop that.
Nobody under 40 uses a phone number. Unless they're texting to that phone number.
You don't call anyone ever?
No.
Not through your job?
No.
You don't talk on a phone to anyone?
And Apple even now does the thing where people call me.
Of course they do. Of course Apple does.
They have like live voicemails. So you can actually see what they're saying. So you can decide if you want to pick it up or just keep letting it go to voicemail.
Yeah, Google has that too. They've had that for like years, just so you know.
Who cares who has it? I'm saying it just has it.
But you guys at Apple love to say, you know what? Apple's got this thing. Yeah, everyone's had it for a while. No, yeah. This is new. Okay.
Oh, right. So how's that brand new USB-C thing that Apple's let out and absolutely nobody had for 5 years now?
I don't know what you're talking about because I don't have a new phone.
Aw.
Just don't borrow my charger or also overheat it, okay?
Okay.
You will have a new phone. You say it like you won't have the newest thing.
That's
like
coming in November. Year.
Exactly. Hey, see? Exactly. Get a tattoo, man. Just get a freaking tattoo.
Apple. Hey, I got $800 in on the trade, so I'm getting like the top of the line phone for only $400.
Bargain.
Oh, yeah.
Bargain.
So you're going to get that iPhone Pro Max deal, right? Because that's the only way you're going to see any real improvement.
That's right, because that's exactly what I have now is the Pro Max.
Oh, so you won't see any improvement.
The camera's better. I get 5X optical instead of 3X optical.
It'll be Pro Maxer.
Pro, yeah.
And it'll Maxiest. It'll have the double eye vision that HTC had like 5 years ago.
I love that he threw that in there because now he's like, oh, I better throw that in there because they're going to give me a hard time if I don't.
Oh, I laughed at that one when they brought that one up. I was like, yeah. They had that like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
All I know is the Pixel introduced the remove people function from cameras a few years ago, and that is a game changer. If you've never, I'm sure Apple has it now, but they didn't have it.
Actually haven't seen it in Apple's photo editing software yet, and that kind of pisses me off.
Dude, it's so nice to have pictures, and you're like, I don't like the look of that guy. Gone. I don't like the look of that person. Gone. And you just never see him again. It is fantastic.
They did the reverse. They let you pick up the people
you put and people
move
in
them
it?
Into stickers for your text messaging, which I don't use stickers. So
what do you mean stickers? Understand.
You can like put stickers on people's comments and messages.
Oh, so you know who they are and whatnot.
No, so you like react. So it's a reaction. Yeah. It's a reaction sticker.
Oh, yeah. It's gotcha.
Like instead of just an emoji, you can actually put like a sticker.
Everybody listening going, this is the worst episode of the Hollywood Outsider.
Yeah, they're just like, am I listening to right now?
The reason why we're talking about this is that we've actually like gotten to the point where the strike has caught up to us. So we have nothing to talk about, even though that the writers resolved everything last week.
Yeah.
Just so everybody's aware, all of that, you know, time that John had to catch up on all that stuff. Yeah, he didn't do any of that stuff.
No, I caught up on a few things.
Like what? Name one show or movie that you caught up on. Like really caught up on.
Hey, I wrote two reviews.
Okay, but name something you caught up on, like something you hadn't watched that you've been meaning to watch that you... We're going to optimize this strike time to capitalize on the viewing. Which, by the way, he speaks for himself. We are not behind him in this stance. This is just
hey,
the John stance.
I just, this is my way of supporting.
You didn't support anyone. You didn't even watch the work they did. I'm just saying.
I did. I started Invasion. Like two episodes.
Oh my God. It's like a such a lost cause. Such a lost cause.
It's actually funny because those are the same two episodes I started.
I got two episodes in and I'm like, all right, I want to watch this. And I just haven't gotten back to it. I started Wheel of Time. I got two or three episodes into that. I think it was only two. Maybe it was only one. I don't know. But then like life caught up to me and I had stuff to do.
Go life. All right. Let's segue to Halloween because it's officially the month of Halloween now. So what's on your boo list? Like what's the scary stuff or Halloween themed things that you want to see or maybe you want to rewatch or something? I think I want to tell everybody, go check out No One Will Save You on Hulu. That was a really good horror sci-fi thriller about Caitlin Dever is this woman who's kind of cast out of her world, out of her society, her community. And then there's an alien invasion and she's trying to survive and no one will help her. That's the idea of the movie. And it's very dialogue free. I really recommend it. It's a very cleverly paced and interesting film with an ending that is thought provoking.
That is actually on my list.
This sounds really cool. I would totally check it out if the strike was still going on. What I just caught up on is Boogeyman. So that was a summer horror movie that came out. It's based off a Stephen King novel. And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It was really well done. There's this awesome set piece near the end when the whole climax of the story happens. And it was great.
The Boogeyman, that's when we're like, it's a young girl and her sister, right? They're being haunted by the Boogeyman after their mom dies or something like that. That's essentially the story.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, kind of. Yes, their mother dies, and then their father's a psychiatrist who continues working, and there's a little bit of family strife that's happening between them at the beginning of the story, and a man shows up to talk to the father, and turns out his family had died due to the Boogeyman. From there, he kind of passes the Boogeyman to this family, and it's a whole thing from there.
This is a very short story from Stephen King. So, Troy, you and I are big Stephen King readers. I think, John, you read some. I don't remember.
I read some.
But Troy's done, like, Stephen King podcasts, so he's by proxy expert? I don't know. They usually get wrong. Have you watched this one?
Similar. No, I didn't watch it. It's very similar, like, when you think about it, like, to The Shining, where it's, like, family, yes. Dad goes crazy.
No.
But it's,
yes.
But it's different.
No. Okay. That was helpful, but you liked it. That's what we need to know.
Well, the thing is, like, I found, like, as I was watching it, I saw some through lines to The Shining and to Dr. Sleep as far as when I was watching it, because there's a great line in Dr. Sleep where which is another movie that I watched over the weekend, which is a great movie to watch during this time of year. There's a great line where Rose the Hat says that there are more things out there in the world like her. She just happens to be the prettiest of them. There's definitely a through line there. There's no definitive through line as far as there's no throwback to any of those other movies, but you can get a feeling that this is sort of related in a way.
Well, everything is related in the universe. They're all tied to the tower.
No, of course. Why wouldn't they be? What about you, Troy? Is there anything you want to check out?
Well, you mentioned No One Will Save You. Mm-hmm. Also have Run Rabbit Run over on Netflix, I believe it was. And then I want to finally get to Cobweb. I was saving it for the spooky season.
Cobweb was good. I saw that one earlier this year. That's definitely good. It's got some malignant vibes. I dig it.
That's pretty cool. I'll have to check that out. One of the things that I'm doing for Halloween season this year is I'm going to Halloween Horror Nights, which is an event at Universal Studios, at California and Orlando. And they turned the whole studio system, the whole park, into different haunted houses, and there's several that I'm going to definitely just check out. There's a Blumhouse haunted house. There's a Stranger Things haunted house that I want to see. And there's, I believe, a Megan experience, so that you'll have like the little Megan robot running around scaring the crap out of you.
No, that won't scare me.
The rumor was that there was a Last of Us experience being added this year.
There is a Last of Us experience that may being made this year.
What is that? If you bring your daughter with, they'll get rid of her for you?
Too soon.
Too soon. Oops.
No, but yeah, if I went there and I saw a clicker, I've been through the Walking Dead experience at Halloween Horror Nights, and it wasn't that scary, to be honest. If I saw a clicker, I'd probably wet my pants.
They're not real, man. Why would you wet your pants? I would be like, that's because a guy in a mask.
Every time I played the video game, man, you'd like come around the corner and you hear that. It's like, ah!
And then you rage through your controller.
Where's the knife?
Rage through. I want to revisit The Exorcist because the Believer sequel's coming out. It's my mom's favorite horror movie, and I've never liked it. I don't really care much for demonic or ghost stuff. So, but I swore that I would take her to see the new one, so I have to rewatch the old one to remember what the hell was going on. And I also want to do it like an It chapters 1 and 2 rewatch. I want to do that.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that in a couple of years, so I want to check that out. As I want to watch them as one movie. I've never done that. I've only done like watched chapter 1, then I watched chapter 2. So
it's kind of funny how the It chapter 1, chapter 2 kind of also mirrored the TV show, where the chapter 2 was just not as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. Nobody gives a shit about adults.
That's right. Adults suck.
Adults do suck.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron gets mad at us on a regular basis.
Yeah. That's why we need more like Stranger Things, Goonies, E.T., kid type things. Like, those things work really, really well.
Definitely don't follow the House of Usher, which Amanda will review a little bit later. Nancy mm-hmm. Drew's on Max. I never wanted to watch it, but I've heard so many like actually pretty good things about it. So it might be something I check out. And I did watch season 1 of Dark Winds because they AMC released like a couple seasons on Max. I dig that show a lot.
Is that still happening, or does that end at the end of September?
No, it's still going on. Oh, I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know about that. No, I think it just dropped on there.
Or is it like they're doing different shows? I know Killing Eve is supposed to only be on for a small period of time.
It's through October 30th. So Dark Winds will still be there.
One more month.
Yeah, okay. Killing Eve is there. But it's only the first season of Dark Winds. I totally recommend it, though, if you haven't watched it. It's a good show where Zay McLaren, you've seen him on Westworld and bunch of other stuff, but he's a wonderful Native American actor, and he's basically taking a supernatural tinted horror / cop thriller and putting it on Native American land. So it's very interesting. Cool story, cool backdrop. I recommend it. All right. Well, before we get to our topic and our review of The Fall of the House of Usher and the creator. So whole teachable minute. We're basically padding this show, right? Because there's not much news to talk about still with all these strikes that have gone on the last several months. So in 1 minute or less, tell the audience one thing you've learned recently from any movie or TV show. Have as much fun as you would like.
All right. Well, I have actually been a non-coffee drinker for quite some time.
What?
I found that if I was drinking coffee, I wasn't sleeping very well because I actually replaced water with coffee because I would like drink it all day.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, well, that's a problem.
In order to get more water in my life, I decided to change over to the brown water, you know, this thing called tea.
Oh, I thought you meant poo water.
No, not that kind of brown water.
Okay, thank God.
That was a Ted Lasso reference. Uh-huh. So the tea, but it has to have like Great Lakes local honey in the tea to make it palatable. And so after some recent entertainment watches, I now have decided to switch back to coffee because, as long as there's nothing in the drink, which black coffee is totally fine, I feel like I am safer and will be sure not to die anytime soon.
What entertainment show? How are you tying that into entertainment? What? I'm confused.
It's fairly, you said recent, so I don't want to like give it away.
Because
it might be a spoiler for some people.
Okay. So if people are watching whatever you're talking about, they'll understand?
They will totally understand.
But no one else on the planet will.
Well, it depends on if they're able to see this particular property.
It's got to be Star Wars.
Actually, no.
It's got to be Star Wars.
It's got to be Ahsoka. Got to be.
Wait, how many syllables did you just add to Ahsoka?
Ahsoka. All right. So you're back to coffee. You gave up coffee for the bong water.
I gave up coffee because I was nervous about what might be in my tea.
Interesting. All right. And John, what about you? Anything?
From watching Boogeyman, I saw something that I thought was really cool, which was there's basically a stuffed moon that you can get. It's on Amazon and it glows. And like the little girl in it was basically hugging it to go to sleep. And like when I say glow, it puts off a lot of light. I want one of those, and I would feel so much better if I had one.
So do you want to go get one and we'll wait, or?
Oh, would you wait?
Yeah, I think we would for sure.
That's okay. amazon.com/wishlist/Arjan.
Yes, that's exactly,
exactly
right.
Exactly.
I want to go back to the fact that you quit coffee and then you quit coffee because you were drinking it all day. Like, were you getting fresh cups all day or drinking the same cup throughout the
day? Yeah, no, fresh cups. Like, it flowed freely. Like, it was, you know, coming from the heavens.
Right.
Did you condition at any point? Because I feel like if you drink that much coffee, you're going to get palpitations. And it's going to be like palpitations.
That's kind of exactly why I gave it up.
Well, I mean, I have like 3 to 4 cups a day. But my last cup happens at 1 o'clock.
You have it scheduled?
Yes.
This is a fascinating discussion. You have scheduled coffee?
I do.
I don't understand. Like, just drink it when you want it, man. Like,
I have my first two almost back-to-back in the morning. And then I wait about 2 hours because I have to have two 40-ounce things of water behind that. And then about 2 hours, I have my third cup. And then at 1 o'clock, I have my last cup. The first and last cups both have a protein powder in it.
Is that what we call it? All right. Well, there's a lady I work with who has to have coffee at 2 o'clock, and she swears if she doesn't get that coffee, she gets a headache. And I swear she actually says, I have a migraine at like 2:15.
That's a true statement because of the caffeine withdrawal.
Yeah, you get addicted to it. But you know what? I drink it every day. I drink 2 cups in the morning. And that's it. But I skip it all the time. I never have any problem. No headache, no withdrawal, nothing. It's just my body's like, yeah, cool.
I don't really drink it over the weekend. It's only during the week because for me and my ADHD, I really can't do the ADHD meds. So because I have AFib. So because of that, they don't want me to be on the stimulants for ADHD. What they do instead, what my psychiatrist said instead is, hey, why don't you just go ahead and drink all the coffee you want? Because that's going to be better for you because it's not going to be the same kind of stimulant.
Yeah, I usually just have my one cup now, like after the bike ride in the morning to warm up.
That's good. All right, well, I've got two things that I've learned. One is, this is recently, this is actually a little bit ago, but Neil deGrasse Tyson went public with Moonfall is the most scientifically inaccurate movie, replacing Armageddon. And I just, it's like, duh, right? I mean,
I feel like there's a world in the moon. I'm sorry if you haven't seen Moonfall yet, but there's a world
inside
in the moon.
Yeah, we didn't need a full panel study over like
right.
6 years with like placebos and all this other stuff in order to come up with the fact that Moonfall was completely not possible.
I'm a big fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think he's a very smart man. I met him. I've interviewed him. He's been on this podcast. You can actually hear that episode somewhere way back when. But on the same token, which I say too much, I don't need to actually do anything to know Moonfall is the most scientifically inaccurate. The moon attacks the Earth at one point, and there's a secret little base, like you talked about, inside the moon. Everyone knows that is the most scientifically accurate film, but now I have it confirmed by a physicist who apparently spent time doing this.
Right. They also essentially launched a rocket into space by making the world jump.
It happens, right? That's how you do things.
Yeah.
Palpitations. It's the Earth palpitations.
Also,
a much more useful piece of information is I was watching No One Will Save You, and also this show on Max, called Does Murder Sleep? Where it's true crime, and each case is somebody that was murdered in their sleep by someone else, etc. And what those two properties have taught me is that you need to have an emergency plan every time you go to sleep. You need to sleep in movable clothes, like your clothes need to be like fluid, so you can get up and you could be outside, you could be inside, whatever. You have to be ready to go. Maybe you have socks on, maybe you have footies at the bed. I don't know, but you have clothes on you, ready to go. If you sleep naked, you're dead. You're done. It's done for you, because you're gonna spend too much time trying to put something on because of vanity. It's phallus. Don't do it. Have a weapon handy right next to the bed. Phone doesn't count. I don't care what it is. Probably not a knife unsheathed, because in case you're, you know, with someone in the bed and you get spooked, you don't want to actually accidentally grab the weapon, and you know, you don't want to do that. So just have something handy, but make sure it's safe for you. Just be prepared. So I have clothes on that you can move in. Maybe it's pajamas. I don't know. And have a weapon handy and lock your door. I've done this since I couldn't even tell you how long, where I always lock my bedroom door and kind of put like a stop underneath it, just because I've watched way too much true crime. Because I prepared, man. You know, I grew up in the project. There was always like, I grew up in the project. There were always people trying to break into my house. So I've always done this. It isn't just true crime.
So it wasn't just because you're trying to keep the kids out while you were doing something with the wife.
No, I've done it since I was a kid. Yeah. Lock the door and put a stop under the door so that even if they get the door open, they can't open it immediately. So it gives you time. It buys you time.
I'm always ready to go when I'm sleeping. Me and my sleep paralysis demon have a nightly contest to see who's going to mess with who first. And there's been plenty of times where like I attack the darkness with like a pillow, my fist, everything. I've just like, it's bad.
Is that like residual trauma from when the United States came in and invaded?
Yeah. I mean, maybe part of it, you know, you never can tell.
Panama trauma.
Sounds like somebody took my advice and watched Spy Ops.
Ah, that's interesting. Well, all right. Well, there you go. There's our, that's what we got to offer. Hey, if you want to support us on Patreon, at this point you probably gave up, but if you want to,
we might have to pay them.
I know. Go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And any support you give, you get bonus content back. So we really appreciate the help. Okay, Amanda Sink is here. She was not able to join for the whole episode, but she is here for the review of The Fall of the House of Usher, which hits Netflix on October 12th, because Amanda watched this whole damn series. If you go to the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com, you should see her full written review, but we're here to talk about it on the show, and it's going to be spoiler-free, but here's what it's about. Siblings Roderick and Madeline Usher have built a pharmaceutical company into an empire of wealth, privilege, and power. However, secrets come to light when the heirs to the Usher dynasty start dying. Amanda, this is another Mike Flanagan horror series, but it's based off a book that I know you read, correct?
Yes, some years ago. I can't remember exactly when, what year it was, but yeah, I read the whole novel from Edgar Allan Poe.
And this is the last one for Netflix that he's doing, his last horror series. So his genres have kind of bounced around from haunting to vampires to random ghosts. Like, what is the tone here? I don't know this book, so help me understand what the tone is.
Yeah, they're definitely taking it into a much darker tone than the original story kind of has to it. But don't get me wrong, all of these novels that he's been pulling from are traditional classic gothic horror novels. They just vary in the level that he's taken it to. And in this one, it's a lot about the family dynamics, and it's about the relationships, and it's about the turmoil that happens as one crumbles to the next. But there is still that element of horror and terror throughout the series, because he's still integrating those really clever jump scares when it comes to ghosts, or the ones that kind of haunt in the background and you don't notice them until a second rewatch. So that distinct feature of his Netflix series is not going away. I just don't want people to go into it thinking that it's going to be some sort of a paranormal type of show. It's very much taking place between up to like three different periods of time. So you're looking into the past, you're looking in the present of like where this story is currently at, and we're reflecting on basically what's happened that brought us to this current day. And there's a lot of horror built into each timeline.
So it's not really a ghost story then?
No. The ghosts are present. They're there. They have moments that scare you, that, you know, are trying to build tension and make things more impactful, but they don't revolve around the ghosts. They are much more a background character than you would expect, like if you were to only have watched the first series, Haunting of Hill House.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. All right. So is the writing and production just as sharp and crisp as it has been in his past series? Minus the Midnight. I wasn't a fan of Midnight Club, but What about you? Did you think the writing and production was just as sharp? Like, this is a high quality production for Netflix?
This is, yeah. I mean, I certainly wouldn't put this above Hill House. That one is going to be a hard one to top. But the way he's able to intertwine character development, these relationships, and integrate modernized stories from these very, very, very old stories that they are derived from is what's always impressive to me. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, Edgar Allan Poe is not writing about a pharmaceutical company and AI and shit like that back, you know, when he was writing his novel. So he had to definitely, Flanagan had to come up with a lot of this content is his own. It's very original. It's very unique. But he's playing on the core of how the novel operates and, you know, the small pieces that come along with it. It's the original story is very minimal in the scheme of things. So he has a lot of wiggle room to develop what he wants the story to look like. And he does it really well. Production-wise, I mean, if you like his other stuff, you're going to like this.
So lots of Easter eggs, things to look for, lots of scares, like genuine scares. Were you ever unnerved? Were you unnerved?
Yeah.
Terrified at all?
There's, because what they're doing when they bring those unnerving moments to you is he has, oh God, I love it. He has such a brilliant way of merging the physical horror of what we're seeing and what we're experiencing with the mental horror that our characters are going through.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of characters, the performances are what he's known for. And he has his usual returning actors, including Carlo Gugino, Kate Siegel, his wife, I believe, Annabeth Gish is returning, Henry Thomas is returning, but also a few new additions like Mark Hamill. Luke Skywalker's in this at some point, and Willa Fitzgerald from Reacher, who was wonderful in Reacher, and she's also in that Scream series. So who were the standouts in this particular series?
Well, I mean, all of the originals that we're used to seeing all do their, I don't want to say they do their standard performances because they're still very elevated performances. Everyone manages to capture your attention, has a very unique character that they're bringing to screen, has a very unique way of playing it. The ones that would stand out to me, especially as like kind of new faces, is Mary McDonnell as Madeline Usher. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of her, and she has the look of Moira from Schitt's Creek, but she has the vibe of like Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's an incredible combination. I love it.
I'm here for it. Wow.
Yeah. They also are, you know, you're gonna have
She's
characters.
She's a wonderful actress too, by the way. So.
Yeah. You have Bruce Greenwood in here, and I love Bruce Greenwood in general. Mm-hmm. He is a very, I don't know, kind of stoic character, I guess, through most of it. So I wouldn't expect a ton of emotion from him like that he normally gives off, but he does have those really powerful moments where, you know, he's recanting his story. He's Roderick Usher. So he's, the two of them are the present day primary characters that we're following in the story. And he just does such a great job in finding that line between being this character that we're not completely invested in to being a character that we have very conflicting feelings for. And part of that is due to the performance because he does such a good job.
And Arthur Pym, that's Mark Hamill's character. Is he an investigator of sorts? Is that what he's doing?
He is basically like the family's attorney.
Oh, okay.
but he's also, when you have a family of this magnitude, right? Like, I guess I would equate it to, you could probably even equate it to like the Trump family or the Kardashian family, like people who have an insurmountable amount of wealth. Their name has power. It carries weight. It can move things. But also, are they great people? Probably not. And the one other actress that I want to call out who had my favorite performance is Willa Fitzgerald. She plays...
That's who I was talking about from Reacher. She's great.
Yeah, oh, Reacher. Okay. Yep. Yeah, she plays young Madeline Usher
in Reacher.
Yeah, she is great. Oh my God. And I will say that I felt a bit of disconnect at first between her portrayal of Madeline Usher and where Mary McDonald's portrayal of Madeline Usher gets
to. Time, right? So they're going back and forth. Okay.
Yeah, but like everything starts to connect. All the strings start to, you know, connect to each other and make sense by the end. And it's like, oh, I see it now. Mm. So I really loved seeing the younger actors and the older actors and the way that they very intentionally lined up these stories of like how they're telling it to you.
Excellent. Okay. So last question, does it leave anything to a cliffhanger or does the series actually end? And do you get the feeling that the series was worth the investment by the time you were done? Cause like I said, I didn't like Midnight Club and this is his last attempt on Netflix for a limited series. I'd like him to go out on a high. Mike Flanagan, that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you get to the end of it, hopefully you get a bit of a surprise. There were a few surprises for me where I was like, oh, that's, you know, because you as you go along, you start to develop your own theory. What is this character going to do? What's going to lead us to this point? Who is this person? How does that connect to this? And you start to see everything unravel. There's a lot more vulgarity than I expected in this too. But your ending is going to leave you hopefully taking away the Edgar Allan Poe, I don't want to say moral of the story, but it is very metaphorical. And that's the way it was always intended to be.
Okay. Interesting. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what are you giving The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix October 12th?
$8.
Sweet. I can't wait to see this. I can't wait.
It's so good.
All right. Thanks, Amanda. Go back to the rest of your life.
Driving in traffic.
Now let's talk about the creator. This is from writer-director Gareth Edwards, who is known for Godzilla and Rogue One, and also stars John David Washington playing Joshua and Gemma Chan, although not as prevalent in the movie as some of us might like. You might remember her from Eternals and the TV series Human on AMC. Humans, I believe it is. I got to see the movie this weekend. Arjun got to see the movie this weekend, and it was pretty fantastic, I would say, Arjun. I think what people might miss on this, just from what we're seeing in marketing and PR, is that this is the best sci-fi AI action movie of the fall. And I don't really think it's that at all when you actually sit down and see what this movie is all about.
Yeah, no, there's a lot more to this movie than it just being the best sci-fi action movie of the fall, which it happens to be, to me at least, the best sci-fi movie we've had at least in the last 6 months to me. It's also one of the better produced ones. It's funny because they spent $80 million making this movie, which is less than any of the $300 million blockbusters that are out there. And you have a lot of imagery and VFX and actors that are just blowing it away in this movie on such a shoestring budget that it's just like, it's incredible. And it just goes to show that Hollywood doesn't need to spend that kind of money. But this is really a lot more of like a story of family and how we all grow up to create our own families, as opposed to it being something else or something, you know, because we're all the same, that makes us family. It's really going against all that and talks more about how family can mean a lot of things.
Yeah, and I love the double meaning that it presented with the creator concept, right? You assume the creator means whoever's the people that made the AI, or the creator is the people that started this war, or the people that created the weapon that's supposed to end the war. So I love that the creator doesn't tell you a lot about the movie, but yet it also says a lot about the movie at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's pretty great. I was wondering what I was going to go into on this, because if you look at a lot of the imagery, you're seeing a lot of Buddhist imagery. You're seeing a lot of religious implications in this, which is interesting considering that most of the people that you're seeing implicated in these religious situations aren't really people. So I thought that was cool.
I also think it was an interesting take for them in this particular story of humans who were basically wiped out by the AI, at least in the American sense. Los Angeles gets, dropped a nuke, literally ground zero, and then it all kind of shifts, and there's this group of humans that are humans forever, and then there's this other group of humans that are like, well, maybe the AI is okay, and it takes place as a battle in New Asia, as it's determined, because that's where the AI and humans are kind of living together in a copious harmony. And I think it's interesting to try to figure out, well, who is it that is the bad guy in this movie? What did you take away, John?
Well, we've seen this sort of thing happen in real life, haven't we? I can think of at least two specific historical events that were very similar to this that elicited much of the same response. And it is, at least for kicking off a story like this, it makes a lot of sense and it helps. I thought it was interesting that the AI and the people who live with AI seem to display more compassion and more care to their fellow beings. And it was very cool to see the differences between the two.
I think the interesting thing too was that you never really saw AI, right? You expected there to be some superhuman robotic base, some giant computer orb, something that was maintaining everything and like directing everything. The AI was really almost self-sentient in a lot of ways. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the iRobot days or things of that nature, where you had these true AI characters, but you also had the, what were they, simulants, I believe was the name that was used.
Yeah, simulants was the name of it, like where people had donated their faces for these androids to use as their face, which I think this is down the same road, kind of in a way that Westworld went down, didn't it? You did a show on that.
Yeah, I mean, basically Westworld, the concept was that the corporation, the evil corporation, was scanning human thought and actions and recording their every movement. And by digitizing that information, they could then download human consciousness into a prosthetic being, for lack of a better term. And I think in this case, it was truly just, simulated beings that were part machine, part human. And then we find out through the course of the story that they are able to actually download human memories right before they die to a card and kind of upload them into these simulant creatures. And I think that it harkens a lot back to a few of stories we've actually seen back on Netflix. Was one of them that comes to mind, right around the same time as the OA was out. And I think it's an interesting concept about how we want to preserve humanity forever. Like, humanity wants to live forever. So there's a couple ways we're going to do that. We're going to do that by either exterminating everything else and making sure humanity is the dominant species, which is kind of, I think, the position of Allison Janney's character in the movie. But it's also but we also know that we can't physically live forever in these, corporeal bodies. So let's go ahead and figure out a way that we could do that in another way, which is truly download ourselves into a synthetic being so that we can still exist consciously, if no other way.
Right. Story aside, I think I fell in love with most the imagery that we're seeing in this. There's a lot of mixing and matching of robotic and natural formations together to create this world that is very well cemented in its own reality. And this imagery that harkens back to a lot of the older, I almost want to say, Star Wars concept art in a lot of ways, because of the way the androids look and the way that the buildings look, everything. It was like Ralph McQuarrie design work is almost what I'm reminded the most of in this. And it is absolutely gorgeous. The ships and the tanks and the police cars and the cars they're using, everything has this great feel to it, and it doesn't feel like a mix and match. And the simulants themselves look very much like what you would expect a part android, part you know, with a real face on it to look like. I mean, everything about it looked like you can practically touch it. And I was just blown away by that fact. And then eventually I forgot that this was in the real world. What about you?
Yeah, I think it was very much the same thing. I know when the date popped up on the screen at the start of the movie, it was 2060s. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, usually futuristic type movies like this are pushing the boundary, right? 2200, 2300. But the fact that this was 2060, it really got me thinking about how much of what we see today is like advanced, right? But I mean, I'm approaching a half century year old at this point. And if I think back 40 years ago, like, yeah, you know, some of the stuff is pretty much the same as it was 40 years ago, right? Building structure wise, architecture. I mean, things obviously evolve and change, but I could see 40 years from now how the things that I am experiencing today in the year 2023, how it could look like this world very easily. I mean, the iPhone was only introduced 15 years ago, and now we have the ability to like tap our fingers and twist our wrists and do all these hand gesture type motions without ever touching a screen. And so how much further along are we going to be 40 years from now? And that's what made this world feel real and lived in and plausible. And I think that that's just a little bit scary on one side, because it's a lot of things we're going to have to talk about as terms of, is an AI intelligence human? And I think that's a lot what John David Washington's character, Joshua, goes through in this, as he is undercover with a bunch of simulants that are become basically his family and his friends. And he doesn't want to turn on them, but he also has a job and a duty until he finds out what the weapon is really all about.
Right, right. You know, with some of the things you're saying about time and space and all that other jazz, the one thing I can say is that if you ever want to feel what that feels like to be in a place where you have things from way in the past and things that feel way too futuristic in the same place at the same time, go to London, because London, you'll have buildings that have been around since the Victorian era, pieces of wall that have been around since the Romans were there. And then you have these on the opposite end, these brand new skyscrapers. And all of it is working in this mesh of beauty and in intensity that this movie kind of mimics in a lot of great ways. And as far as the character development of this, it's good. I like John David Washington in a lot of things. I just wish I didn't know who the hell he was. You know, I really wish I didn't know that he is the son of Denzel Washington, because I keep on expecting that intensity that Denzel Washington brings to something, and he just doesn't have that. But the cool thing about him is that in a lot of roles that I see him in, is that I can easily place myself in his position. He creates this gateway in which I can sit in his role and visualize myself living through all these things, where, because he doesn't overpower the role in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and his transition throughout the course of the movie from a guy living off the grid undercover, but has a wife, they're going to have a kid together, he's got this family of simulants that he's now, you know, infiltrated. And then he has to wrestle with the fact of, well, what makes more sense, to be loyal to my country and my job, or loyal to my family? And I think he does a really good job of portraying that throughout the course of the movie. You know, whether he has a range of emotion or not, I think it gets a little bit better towards the end of the movie than it does up at the front end. But I really think that his co-stars really are the ones that shine throughout the entire length of the film, right? Especially Alfie, the kid who ends up becoming the weapon, and how the Alfie specifically is tied into Joshua's character.
Yeah, no, Madeline Unavoyelles is Alfie. She overpowers him in a lot of the scenes, and she's, what, 9-10 years old. Gemma Chan, again, completely overpowers him. Ken Watanabe completely overpowers him. Allison Janney, well, forget it. Don't even stand a chance with that Allison Janney in the same room. You know, it takes a very special person to be able to stand up to her. But as far as his growth throughout the story, it is beautiful what you see and how he goes through it. Now, I gotta say that as much as I enjoy this movie, there are a few things that really made me like mad. There's a scene with a dog that stressed me the hell out. There is a scene with a monkey that I'm like, why did we need a monkey? I felt like Cusco and Emperor's New Groove, like what's with the chimp? And then there's a robot watching stripper robots. I mean, look, I'm like the next guy. I like strippers, but I don't understand robots watching stripper robots. As I understand it, the reason why I like watching strippers is because I might be a little bit hormonally unbalanced in that sense where I'm like, ooh, yeah, or something. Or at least that's what Aaron's going to let me to believe, that I'm a pervert in some way, shape, or form. But I don't understand robots wanting to do the same thing because they don't have the hormonal get together to do that, right?
Or that's the thing they were trying to convey, is that they could have those emotions and those feelings. And in a world where AI is almost human-like, why wouldn't they be doing human-like things, especially if they were programmed by humans initially?
I mean, if they're going to be the next step in evolution above us, they don't need to have those kind of needs, man.
I also agree with you. I mean, I think that the scene was interesting, that there was a choice made to put that in there. At the same time, it also did not add any value to the overall story, so it also did not need to be in there.
No, it didn't need to be in there in any way, shape, or form. I got it when we went to that. There's a factory in which they're building simulants, right? And then you've got the one guy who's now, the one guy who's in love with a simulant, and they're kind of like this married couple kind of feel to it. I got it there. That sort of made sense. But when you start having simulant on simulant weirdness, I'm a little bit like, all right, well, we're going a little bit too far.
Speaking of the simulants and the overall aesthetics, the integration of the special effects on that shoestring budget, like, I don't know how they pulled it off, to be honest, because I've seen really bad. I'm looking at you, Ant-Man, right, recently, even Shang-Chi in a lot of ways. There's just a lot of over budgeted stuff that just looks like garbage. And man, did it not just seem like these things were real? The backgrounds, the tanks, the laser beams, the gunfire, like everything just felt real in this environment and very plausible 40 years from now.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Gareth Edwards' bread and butter. I mean, you got to remember, this guy made Monsters ever so long ago, and he made Monsters that, again, absolute shoestring budget, but they were driving through Mexico and he had a crew of five people with him and two actors. And occasionally they'd slide the door open in the damn van, kick the two actors out and say, go make movie magic, and then they'll film it. And he did all the visual effects for the movie himself on his laptop. And he edited the movie all himself on the laptop. So this is kind of his bread and butter, how to make something look cinematic, great, and have amazing visual effects with the bare minimum. It's funny because in some of his interviews, he's actually embarrassed that he spent so much on it. He wanted to spend a little bit less, but there was just no way around it.
Yeah, and I'm hoping for a sec that it takes off and people go see this, because where it is the sci-fi movie of the fall, and maybe even the sci-fi movie of the year, it is definitely not a sci-fi movie in its core story, and I hope that people go see it. For you, $10 per price of admission, what would you give the creator?
I'm giving this a very solid 6.
Oh, see, and I would even give it a 7. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I was surprised at the emotional connection I had with it, maybe because I believe in family, no matter where family exists, whether it's your biological family or otherwise. But yeah, I was a little choked up towards the end. So it got me. So I'd say a full 7.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Arjun.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
We're going to go into our From the Outside In topic now. When is it time to end a franchise? Like, how do you know it's done? And seriously, so Saw X is out. So actually, reviews I think are pretty positive on that one. The Expendables 4 is out, and been out. It's probably gone by the time you're listening to this. Honestly, it did so poorly, but you can still find my review on the website, and it was not good. It was not good. So not good, I didn't even want to bring Stallone back for a review, and boy, had I planned on it. Damn it. I was very disappointed. But then you've got, Fast X. There's another Fast and Furious movie coming. Fast 11 is coming. Mission Impossible 17, on and on and on. So how many movies does it take to end it? And I just kind of want to open that up. Like, we all like some of these franchises, but do you ever feel, I mean, obviously, we're the problem, right?
Yeah, we are the problem. we fall in love with these characters. We end up going along with them for God knows how long. And then they come to a perfectly good end to their story. But because people are always, and especially now because studios have the ability of seeing in real time the kind of chatter that's happening with their properties, especially because they can see in real time what the chatter is about their properties, that you start going beyond what it is that that end of the story is. So then you're like, okay, well, we reached a perfectly good place to stop, but now they're going to start making crap up, and then you can really see the crap in it.
Like, that's the key. It's like when you start making stuff up. But there's like the Hunger Games and movies, Lord of the Rings and that kind of stuff. It's like you knew that there's going to be content because the books were out there, right? Game of Thrones, you know, it's out there because the content is out there. But when you're making something like Fast X where there isn't a content and you're kind of going as you go, as long as there's a good story, keep going forever. The problem is that there wasn't a good story because you start bringing people back from the dead who were clearly blown up in a freaking car in one of the worst movies that should have ever not made the silver screen at all because it's bad.
Is this where you turn into Martin Scorsese and start saying that cinema's dead because of these kind of movies?
No, I'm just... It's just the Fast series like never should have brought Han back ever. Like that just was dumb. That was the jump to shark form. Fierro in space, totally could buy it. Han back from the dead, no way in hell.
Okay, but on the same line, I mean, you've got Mission Impossible. He should have been dead multiple times. His wife definitely should have been dead multiple times.
Could have died, sure, but then did he actually die?
His wife
Han
did
actually died. He blew up in that car.
Wait, I haven't reached a point with Mission Impossible yet where it's hit that ending yet.
Really, the face mask for literally every single opportunity they can to get out of a hole that they put themselves into, like that's not just as dumb as Fast and Furious, really.
But that's the gimmick of Mission Impossible.
It's always a gimmick of Fast and Furious. People keep coming back from the dead. They've done it throughout the whole. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought the Han thing was really stupid. Then again, Fast X, I really enjoyed. I thought it was way better than the one before it. And the idea that The Rock, skip ahead a minute, that The Rock is coming back, you know, that just gets me excited even more. So and. The other one coming back gets me excited too. So like all these characters coming back, I know it's ridiculous, but I think it's into that kind of film.
But the other one coming back is plausible that they could come back. Han blew up.
Why does it need to be plausible?
How is that even? Wait, hold on. The other one. God damn it. I can't even say it without pointing out the fact that how that other one died. There's no reason for her to be back because she should be in like a broken pile of Legos on that runway still.
Well, here's where I'll disagree with you on that one, because all she did was fall off a plane. Like,
exactly.
All she did was roll off a plane, way less definitely dead than Han was, as far as I'm concerned. She should have had a broken leg, you know, maybe, you know, a cracked pelvis or something. I don't know. Maybe she picked up a tiara and went to battlefield. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but
she could
have
had a utility belt like Batman and just, you
know,
propelled herself down.
Maybe we do a crossover. Wouldn't it be awesome? Hey, there is another Wonder Woman movie. Who knew?
It's like, are we trying to end franchises or keep them going for no good reason?
Honestly, I stopped.
We're just basically saying there's plausibility in certain people coming back and there's not plausibility for other people coming back.
Yes, but it goes back to what I was saying, which is why does it have to be plausible if it's in a movie series as ridiculous as this? It is not based on any real thing. And superhero movies do it all the time. They never kill anyone off. These are superhero movies. Those are superhero movies. Everybody hates Fast and Furious. They are superhero movies.
The plot here.
No, the plot was when should it end? And
when should it end?
When it's no longer plausible. So
and
the story
I'm
makes
saying
sense.
That why do they have to be plausible? This is what a discussion is, John. It means we don't all have to just say our piece and hang up. we can have a discussion. And I'm saying, why does that have to be plausible?
Because it doesn't have to be plausible, but if it reaches a perfectly good ending, then that's when it should stop.
But what's a good ending? A good ending to you? It might not be a good ending for me.
Exactly. Who determines that? We need to get to the bottom of this.
If Troy is the one who's got like an answer for absolutely everything, then I'm the one that determines the end of something.
Okay.
I'm going to show up and I'm going to be like, this strike is not going to end until I say it does. And then I'm going to go to the FastX people and be like, you should have ended at the safe bit and called it a day.
Yep. Fast Five. That was it.
But I've enjoyed the movie since. And if you still go see them, you don't even agree with yourself.
Well, we have this thing called an employer named Aaron.
No, you're an employer. Nobody makes you go see these. You choose to go see them.
We're doing it for the fans.
No, you do it because you want to see them. Bullshit.
Hell no.
Then don't watch them.
I mean, he's right. I didn't go see Expendables. I watched the first one again, which I totally forgot was a movie not too long ago. And the only part of that movie that stuck with me long after I watched it was Terry Crews. Because Terry Crews is just a charming person to watch. Mm-hmm. But also his scene was hysterical. They should have ended it when Stallone tried to run.
No, I've heard this joke before. The second one was very good. I even think the third one was very good. The fourth one was dog shit. They sort of stopped at three because they had a trilogy and it worked. And you got away. You got lucky. You made your money back. And it was already fading. Time to move on.
There's like a law of numbers. 3, 5, 7, 9. Those are the numbers you end stuff on.
This is not fandom should be based
on. Did we just find a way to tie this back to Lost, Troy?
Yeah.
Is that what we just did?
No. Yes, it's so.
Prime numbers?
Like when you go to the grocery store, you never see anything that's like $3.96. It doesn't do anything in your brain it just doesn't like click. But when you see it's like $3.95 or $3.97 or $3.99, you're more likely to buy it than if it was $3.96. It's just a fact.
I would buy $3.96 way before I'd bought $3.97.
Just on principle now, right?
Right.
Is there any series that you have, like you've actually given up on, where it's still popular and people are, and you just said, I'm done. I gave that up. I don't care about that anymore.
Saw after the third one.
You used to like it though? Did you used to like them?
It was the first one was great. I thought it was a really clever concept. And then when they decided that we're going to make it into like a Nightmare on Elm Street situation, I was like, I'm done. But the first one was cool. It was a cool twist on the horror genre. Like, why'd you ruin it? By milking
Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. I ended the series with that one.
You didn't go back to it after that?
I didn't go back after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Fourth and fifth one were actually way better than the third one was.
Really? Yeah. I didn't see a point in going back. For whatever reason, they came out and I was like, eh.
Would you guys see another one of those if they reinvented it but still had Johnny Depp?
I can't see it without Johnny Depp, honestly.
Only if they're like time travelers and they're like boosting cruise ships or something. That's how ridiculous Fast and the Furious is. Why not make Pirates of the Caribbean as ridiculous as Fast and the Furious?
It's a different movie franchise. why does he have to get a time? Why is he driving a DeLorean ship and he ends up in the freaking modern days hijacking Carnival?
I want to see Jack Sparrow give Royal Caribbean a run for its money.
That's an interesting twist. What about horror movies that go on and on and on and on? Do you guys have any issue with those going on, because fans keep going back? They really go back for the kills. Nobody cares about the story in those or the plausibility, because they're never
fall in love with the character, the killer.
Yeah. Or they fall in love with the character. I know a lot of people who love Halloween just for Michael Myers, and they love all the iconography behind the shape. I would have probably liked to have ended that after the first movie, but or even the second movie. But beyond that, I can't really justify watching the other ones. I have, and you're there for the kills, sure. But I mean, with the problem with some of these horror movies, like Friday the 13th and Michael Myers, is that there's more people who die on a daily basis downtown than there are people who die in those movies.
Not usually in one day.
You're talking like in real life?
It depends on which downtown city you're in.
I mean,
and what day?
Maybe in a city, but like not on a cabin or a Camp Crystal Lake or a local lake. If they had 17 people die in one night, somebody should shut that camp down like forever.
Who's watching the kids? I don't know how the serial killer is.
Yeah, I gotta get out of here, man. It's dangerous to be out here. What the hell? What's I'm a problem. Like I know I'm the problem, because Friday 13th, I will watch 12 more of them if they make them, and I don't know why. I just really dig the cold silent killer type for whatever reason. It's just a fun genre to me because I find it ridiculous. And, you know, they usually punish assholes. So I'm okay with it. You know, they always let the good people go, and the kids get to live and the dogs live. And sometimes they take out a cat, but I'm okay with that. I mean, you know, they're
I'm the same way with Freddy Krueger. Nightmare on Elm Street was my jam.
You could watch all those.
I think it should have ended with Dream Warriors on the third one, because that's when Nancy's story ended. Mm-hmm. That, but like, I'd still watch Freddy today if there were a new Freddy movie on streaming, so I don't have to pay for it. I wouldn't go to the movie theater to watch it. But
did you watch the new one?
I think I've watched all of them. I might have missed one.
New one wasn't good, but they could redo it.
Yeah,
yeah. The one with Jackie Earle Haley being Freddy Krueger.
Yeah,
right.
You know what's sad is as we're talking about this, right? So we keep saying, well, you should be done at this point. You should be done at that point. Yet we keep going to see things that should have ended several movies ago by many people's standards. And I see this all the time on the internet, right? Where people say, well, you gotta stop remaking, rebooting, and doing sequels, and da da da, make original. You know, this is what Martin Scorsese loves to do these days. Just go online and say, anything that's not what I like is bad. They wanted to franchise The Departed after I made that. I couldn't believe that. I almost quit. Dude, they made 3 movies overseas before you ever made your movie. So maybe relax a little. They did franchise it. Anyway, so there's a lot of people that are against the whole franchise thing, yet everyone I know still watches franchise movies. So are we all just hypocrites in a way?
Totally, because I was like, Walking Dead season 11, I'm finally done with this thing. And then a minute Walking Dead season 11 ended, it was like, and we're having the final season ever of Fear of the Walking Dead. And I was like, well, crap, I missed 3 seasons of that. I should just probably finish that. So I started watching Fear of the Walking Dead again. And then Daryl came out and Dead City came out. And I'm just like, nope, I'm still watching The Walking Dead.
Daryl finally came out? Good for him.
Not like that, John.
Oh,
the show came out.
I thought they were really being progressive with that.
Maybe. Maybe that's what the twist is.
Something's getting twisted.
Stop saying dumb things. It's interesting because I had this conversation with somebody not too long ago where they were saying, I'm so sick of franchises and everything else. And this is the same person that loves NCIS, you know, all those, and watches all of them. So my question to them is, I said, what's the difference? And they said, well, it's very different, you know, a bunch of movies than a TV series. And I'm like, it's literally like 22 movies. What are you talking about? It's the same thing. There's no difference to it. You're going on for 15 years. What's the difference?
Right.
Well, those characters evolve. So do they in those movies sometimes if they're meant to. Like, a killer is not going to evolve. They're just always a killer. But, you know, Mission Impossible, even Ethan Hunt evolves a little bit. Hell, Jack Sparrow
evolved. Martin Riggs evolved from the first movie to the last movie.
He did. Became a totally different guy.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger totally evolved.
Did he?
He sharpened his knives differently in the third movie. He used different killing tactics.
Nice. Okay.
What?
He's just being Troy.
I mean, if we really want to take a look at why this happens, I think television is what it is. I mean, is probably part of the problem because we're so used to these stories now that are continuous and we fall in love with these characters. And then we start wanting the same thing from TV to movies. And, you know, and TV has grown in such a way now that we're having essentially 6-hour, 7-hour long movies that we are binging throughout a weekend. And I mean, how much different is that from watching a movie in the theater, especially with the effects that we're getting these days and the kind of stories we're getting? Some of the better storytelling, I know Aaron's about to get mad at me for finishing this sentence. Some of the better storytelling is happening in TV. So why wouldn't we want that?
I
think it's not about TV or movies anymore. That's the problem. It's like, it's the medium in which it's delivered. If you can tell a good story in great example, since we're talking about the strike, right? Last writer's strike was Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog, which was 9-minute videos told over 6 or 7. No, that was maybe 3 parts for Dr. Horrible. And some fans actually made the teenage version of Horrible Turn, I think was the name of it. And it was like 9 or 10 10-minute episodes. And it's fine, right? If I do the same thing and have Obi-Wan Kenobi, which was a 2.5-hour movie, and I turn it into 2 2.5-hour movies and air over 6 episodes, like, people want the content. It's just that I now have the ability to do it on a small screen in my house instead of a giant movie theater. So the distribution's different. The revenue generation off of it is different. And because of that, like, I think exactly what John is saying, streaming Cobra Kai in one day is like, we've gotten five really great Karate Kid movies, or 10, if you want to think about runtime.
But we still do it in movies too. We do it wherever the whatever we watch, wherever we watch, we're doing it. We're the problem. We're always the problem. People love to complain about it because of whatever they don't like, they love to complain about. People that don't like Fast and Furious movies love to complain about it's gone on too long. But they'll love Mission Impossible movies. And so they can keep making them. I'll keep seeing them. There's no difference. NCIS has been on forever. People will keep watching it. Well, I mean, as long as they make it. Grey's Anatomy, you know, you're still watching that, Troy. That's been on forever. You like what you like. But we keep, no matter what it is, we keep every fan I know that says something should end also watches something that should have ended. By someone else's standpoint.
It's a different thing, though. It's not that I'm watching it because I absolutely love it. I'm watching it because I'm a completionist.
Yeah, but you still watch it. I can quit stuff, no problem.
Yeah, see, I can't. I played Final Fantasy, the video game series, like my whole life, pretty much. And Final Fantasy 16 just came out. It is absolute dog garbage compared to the other Final Fantasy games I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to play it because I'm a completionist.
Did you finish it?
Well, I mean, I'm in the middle of it right now.
So you're still playing it even though you hate it?
Yes.
I don't understand that. I
gotta
can't.
Know how the story. Once I start the story, I gotta know how the story ends.
I don't understand. I've had this conversation with Scott Clark, Gaming Outsider. You know, he's an avid gamer, and he'll play a game, and he's like, "Oh, you got the story's so great." I'm like, "Man, I don't care. If I stop enjoying the game, I'm done. I don't care what the story's telling me. I just don't care."
I'm finding nowadays. It used to be I was like Troy. If I started something, I had to finish it. If I didn't finish it, then I would be thinking about it. If I wasn't thinking about it, then trying to finish it, then I was trying to get, you know, do whatever I could to mainline the crap out of it. But now I'm getting to a point where I will like we opened the beginning of the show up with. I started watching a couple of shows. I really like the shows. I really want to go back and watch the shows. I just can't be bothered to turn my TV on again to watch those. It's not necessarily a completionist thing for me anymore. It's become something where it's just not as important because you know what? It's going to be there when I decide to watch it again.
It's almost too much, too comfortable.
Right.
Need the until days Warner Brothers buys it, and then it won't be there.
Right. I need to go back to the days. Westworld. Remember when Disney had the VHS tapes? Right. They had the VHS tapes
in the vault.
Yeah, the vault where they were out temporarily. I mean, those things sold like hotcakes because people were just had to have them before they were gone every single time. It's wild.
But yeah, WB is putting Westworld in the water tower and then pulling it out 5 years from now. Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, it's going to be on Freevee or one of these crazy things. But we keep watching these things. And if you're a fan, you're okay with it. If you're not a fan, you want it to stop. James Bond's been going on for 60 years and it's going to keep going on because... Yeah, they do reinvent it, but it's still the same series. I mean, it hasn't evolved that much. They just have better technology these days.
You know, the whole mentality of being, you know, that just needs to end. I mean, I know I said some of it about some of the series that I picked out or that I'm like, yeah, it just needs to end. And sure, for me, it needs to end, but... I'm not going to try to yuck somebody's yum by being like, that's so stupid, it needs to end. It just doesn't work for me anymore.
But people do it all the time.
Yuck other people's
people are entitled.
Yes. I enjoy certain things. I was excited for Expendables. If you listen to our holiday movie preview, I was extremely excited for Expendables 4. I was wrong. I can admit that freely now. Boy, was I wrong. Disappointment 101. But I was excited for it. But whenever I told anyone that, they would tell me, oh, that franchise should be dead. That franchise. Now, this time they got lucky, but I can't tell you how many times they've told me that. And I went and enjoyed whatever the thing was that they said should end. The Meg 2. So many people said, well, it should have ended after the first one. That movie shouldn't have a sequel. I had a great time in that sequel. And if you didn't like it, you didn't like it, but I had a great time with it. Everybody's taste is different. And some people have no problem, you know, just having a little fun now and again. Just because you want top level cinematography, top level storytelling, top level production, top notch acting, Oscar caliber performances, whatever it is you think you have to have in every single film you watch. Not everybody feels that way, and that doesn't make them wrong. It's just their taste is different, and I don't know why we can't get there. as a
well, culture. I think that's part of it, but also we've become so dependent on other outlets and other people's opinions, and once we latch on to other opinions that match or don't match what we're saying, we start basing everything off of that. I remember way back in when Batman versus Superman came out, and I was talking to some friends, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's garbage. No, it's actually not bad. It's an enjoyable movie. Oh no, it's the dumbest thing ever. Okay, well, which part did you have problems with? Oh, I didn't see it."
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the same way with a lot of the movies that people are trying to talk down to when it comes to other things. We don't have a problem walking up to somebody and being like, "Oh, you really want to see that, huh? Yeah, yeah, I really want to see it. You're going to have a really good time watching it, right? Well, it's a good chance I'm going to. It's going to suck. And you're dumb for watching it." Like, that's what I think part of the problem is that we are so willing to sit there and just either force our opinion on somebody or want to tell them how much they're wrong for enjoying something, that that's part of it. It's like, that's where the problem really comes in when it says, when we start saying that, "Oh, that should end this at this point, and you are wrong for watching it." That's when I think we need to take a step back and be like, somebody's watching this shit because people keep on going back.
We can always be wrong as well too, because I remember when Logan happened, right? Logan was the 1/3 Wolverine movie officially, and that was the end of Wolverine, and then Hugh Jackman said it was the end, everybody said it was the end, and I was pretty stoked, and I didn't want any more Wolverine. I'm done. The character's done. Let him die in peace. It was a marvelous film. There's no reason to ever go back to that well. Then they had the idea, well, what if we put Wolverine in Deadpool 3? Wait, what? No, this character's done. It's never going to happen. Marvel's never going to let that happen. Let me enjoy what a great closure that was, because I love that character and how Hugh Jackman represented him. Then they officially announced the casting. Suddenly I'm excited again. Suddenly I feel wrong again. Suddenly I'm glad they made another Wolverine movie, because it ain't Deadpool 3 to me. It's Wolverine 4 with Deadpool.
Well, you're wrong, Aaron.
I'm aware, but I can't wait. I'm excited. And it won't.
Like, how does it feel to be wrong?
Fine. I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong.
Are you? Whoa, what?
I do it all the time. You should listen more.
I can't hear you. What?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
Troy?
No, Troy doesn't admit when he's wrong. Aaron has admitted.
We do know that, too.
Aaron has admitted it plenty of times.
Look at the look on his face right now. Like,
you can't see Troy, but he's hiding from his microphone, really. He just doesn't even want to go near it. He's like, "I don't know what you guys are talking about. It's not me." Hey,
Connors, I like Wolverine. I'll watch everything Wolverine related. It's fine. And just like Aaron's going to be back to watch Expendable Live.
Oh, I would.
Meg Free.
I would.
Expendables Live. He's going to go to the ballet. It's going to be Expendables Five. The ballet.
That would be good.
Spend Alive. Spend
I'm
Five.
Not, I'm not lying. I would watch another one. Yeah, I would. I hate to say it, but I would. It might not be in the theater, though, if the trailer looked.
But what I really like, though, is like the John Wick universe, right? Because I don't need another Keanu Reeves John Wick movie, but the universe is really interesting.
Agreed.
So keep the universe going and focus on other people.
He's right. What's wrong with that?
No, he's not right.
Have you seen The Continental on Peacock?
No, I'm not going to watch it.
Well, that's too bad. You're missing out. It's actually a pretty good show.
It's probably terrible.
And Ballerina looks great. Anna de Armas? Yeah.
Oh, I can't. I was about to do the same bit with her, but I can't. It's going to be amazing with her. It's Anna de Armas.
How's it feel to be wrong?
How am I going to say a single bad thing about her?
Can't be done. All right. So pick your favorite franchise. Has to have 5 films or more. Any franchise had to have 5 films. Now, when should that franchise have ended? And you can't go, "Well, this one, but I'm so happy it went on, blah, blah, blah." No, you have. When do you think it actually should have ended? With what movie?
I would just say I got 2 specifically.
Oh, okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3 should have been the end of the Nightmare on Elm Street, because I think Nancy started it. Nancy should have ended it.
I like that.
And then I think Hunger Games should have ended with the 3rd movie. Yes, it counts because there's 5 movies, because Snow comes out in November.
But wasn't the third one, wasn't there a two? Wasn't that a 2-parter?
The 3rd one made a 3rd one and a 4th one, just like Harry Potter made the 7th one and the 8th one, which should have only been the 7th
one. So you're saying it should have ended with that 4th one officially.
It should have ended with a much shorter version of 3 and 4 squished together into a brilliant 2.5 hour action-packed finish.
But not this prequel thing.
But not the stretched out, and definitely not the prequel.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fair. John, what do you got?
Bourne Ultimatum should have been last.
Yeah. You didn't want the Jeremy Renner version?
No, I mean, I like the Jeremy Renner version. However, I think that could have been its own story. You know, you didn't have to go and tie it in the Bourne in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it could have been Attack of a Snowplow.
Oh my God!
Jeremy Renner's Bourne's on top of a mountain. There's a bunch of terrorists with snow cats attacking. Oh, this thing writes itself. Reboot.
I forgot my other one.
He's fine, so it's okay to make that joke.
Yeah, it's totally okay to make that joke.
Mine's Friday the 13th. That's my favorite horror franchise, but it should have ended with 7. Like,
is 7 my favorite one? The one with the psychic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought long and hard on this because Friday the 13th has a lot of movies. It has, you know, technically 12.
Right.
But they never got the 13th one. Stupid rights issues. But I thought long and hard, but I wasn't going to give up on 6 because 6 is a lot of fun. And it has an Alice Cooper soundtrack, which is kind of awesome. Then 4, I love 4. 5, I don't care about, but I really dug 6, even though it's kind of wild how they bring a psychic in and Jason's taking on a psychic.
That's because, 7, right?
Yeah, that's 7. Because there's like a good 10 minutes where Jason looks like, what the fuck is happening? And I just, I love that. All these movies, and he's never really felt like he's, I don't have to worry about this. Like in 7 at the end, he's like, what is this chick doing? This is not cool. I can't do this. And I've been like dead for like 20 years now.
Yeah, he looks so confused. His eyes lined up. All right, that's my bit for the night. I'm out of here.
That's funny. All right. You can always share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Of course, rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. Before we're out of here, let's do Hot Take. This is where we take a TV show that's universally loathed, but you love it for some reason. Tell me what the series is and why you like it so much when everybody else seems to hate it.
It's a show called Lost. It's amazing.
Who hates Lost?
Everybody that hated the ending hates Lost.
I don't hate the end. I hate the show. I hate the end. I don't even hate the ending. I hate.
But you like the end. You don't like how? Yeah. You the people that wanted the answers. People that want the answers.
People that had expectations that were set up in the show themselves. Okay, understood. Go ahead.
Expectations that they set up in their own minds because they feel like they needed the answers to things that they just didn't need the answers to.
I want to fight you, but I'm not going to do it. You go ahead. You go ahead. Floor is yours. Why do you love it?
Lost is a fundamental show that came out at a time when we really were kind of thinking about what does the world look like in a post 1999 scenario, right? You're getting into the aughts and you're like, what is the aughts and what is this new millennium going to be? And what's this new century going to be? And things of that nature. And it kind of started to feel like things were getting disconnected and Lost was a way for us to all kind of find each other again, especially when the internet community started to sprawl with information about the show. And then all these virtual water coolers started happening. And I think that was really the key moment for television was really having online fan communities. It's when podcasting started. There was just a lot of buzz around that particular TV show because as the show explained that it's a story about the people and not about the island, the people portion of the fandom was actually connecting as the characters were connecting on the show. There are people today that I would not be friends with or even do podcasting for that matter if it had not been for Lost. So in a way, it's like it's almost a religious experience in that regard where you just kind of had an awakening in 2004, 2005. And I thought it was just really well done. And when you got to the end of the show and kind of understood what Jack was going through and why they made the flash sideways so that they could just find each other again, because all the experiences that happened on the island actually happened. They were not dead the whole time. Swear to God, don't write an email.
No, they weren't. They weren't dead the whole time.
There's still people that think they were, even to this day. But the big thing about that show is that it's just the connectedness that happened on the island also happened off the island in internet communities and fandoms and people. And I think that's why it's just such a powerful show, because we're all trying to solve the mysteries as it went along. And then you just realize you're sucked in and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm actually like sorry for Ben Linus. Who would be sorry for Ben Linus? But I'm sorry for Ben Linus. I feel bad for the guy. Like, that's how good that show was, that it made you like the hateable characters.
Okay. How about you, John?
I'm going to go with How to Get Away with Murder, which is, you know, I did not remember how much people hated this show, even though it was a wildly popular show and it was hated for a lot of different reasons. The kind of twists and turns, the fact that they kind of felt repetitive after a little while. But the thing I really loved about the show was, number one, Viola Davis. Her character was amazing. Viola Davis is just amazing. I think that she is just going to become a big star someday.
You think? I hope things work out for her.
That's my hot take about Viola Davis. I hope it works out for her. But like, everything about the show, to me, as far as somebody who watched it, I would have to say that if you watch it in its entirety and you follow along with the story, it sure, there's parts of it that do feel a little repetitive, and or they're just coming up with excuses or reasons to do something. But they put it, tie it all up in this beautiful bow in the last episode of this, of the whole series. And it's almost to the point where, for me, as somebody who doesn't normally get attached to shows like this, I felt somewhat emotional because of the journey that Viola Davis' character went on. So I think that's a show that really deserves a good sit. It's got a lot of great moments to it. It is a Shonda Rhimes show, even though there was certain parts where somebody else was taking over as showrunner. So yeah, I think that's a good show. That's my choice.
I loved it until season three, and at the end of season three, I just never went back, and I don't know why.
I thought you watched it all the way through. You didn't watch it all the way through?
No, I didn't. Scandal was the same way. Scandal, I think I went through season four and then I skipped a season or two and then just watched the finale.
Well, see, Scandal to me, though, I loved Scandal for a while, it jumped the shark probably after season two or three, maybe even four. But it definitely jumped the shark for me because it was just too much. It was too much of going back to the president and having a relationship with the president. What was cool about it was her and her team of fixers, and they lost track of that.
Right. Because they focus on her dad and command and all this, and what you're going to do for the country.
Oh, well, stop. Her dad was awesome.
Her dad was awesome. That was the best part of the show.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so
Scott fully ruined it.
Mine's going way back in the well, but it was not well liked when it aired, but it's one of my favorite. It's a half hour comedy.
This is the All in the Family plug?
Huh?
This is an All in the Family plug?
No, Sledgehammer.
Oh, Sledgehammer. Okay.
Yeah.
Sledgehammer.
Yes. It was David Rash as this Clint Eastwood wannabe Dirty Harry-ish cop. And all he does is the worst cop things ever. And he massive destruction and he's shooting he sleeps with his gun. It's very Naked Gun-ish in a way.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just a big bobblehead of masculinity and ridiculousness. And it was in the 80s, and I love the show. I absolutely love the show. And it was only, I think it was on like three seasons or something, but man, I've rewatched it multiple times. I own that one. I had a lot of fun with that show.
The episode where he loses his gun and he gets all depressed.
It's like his child disappeared.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's at a bar drinking himself half to death because he lost his gun. And then at the end of the episode, he finally got his gun back, and him and his partner, it's more like not really a Clint Eastwood, but more like a hunter kind of
rip-off. No, that was totally a riff on Dirty Harry, man. That was totally a riff on Dirty Harry.
Anyways.
But sure, Hunter too. I dug Hunter too. So
yeah.
Put me in that.
You know, him and his partner were in the bar, and then, you know, the bartender's like, oh, it looks like you got your girl back. And he's like, yeah. And he pulls out his gun, and he's like, now I'm going to go shoot her.
That was a funny show, man.
Yeah.
I laughed a lot. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. And guess what? We're done. So remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. was the Sledgehammer catchphrase? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Well, they had a magical portal that could tell us.
Oh, like it's called Google, right?
I use Bing.
Trust me, I know what I'm doing. That's what it was.
Trust me, I know.
Trust me.
Hey, wait a minute.